Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families Podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about eliminating screen problems in their home. This is Melanie Hempe, and we are so glad you are joining us today. If you are one of our regular listeners, welcome back. And if you are a new friend, we are so glad you found us. We are really, really happy that you are no longer alone in your journey to fix the screen problem in your home. In fact, I should say your quest or your nightmare. I don't know. It's all these things. It can be really hard when we have screen issues going on in our house with our kids. So I have been wanting to get to this podcast for so long. It is another one of those tough topics. But after the show today, you are going to feel so educated and so motivated, and everyone in your home and your future home and your kids' homes after you're gone, everyone will benefit. Our mission over here is to free families from toxic screen problems. Not all screens are toxic, but some of them are. In today's screen culture, unfortunately, video games are on the top of the most toxic list of screens. We are going to tell you why, and it may not be what you think. So my guest today is Olivia Bruner. She and her husband authored the book PlayStation Nation. And if you have been listening for a while and you remember that title, it's because it was the very first book for parents that I read back when I was struggling so much with our oldest son. In fact, I think it was the first book for parents that dove into this hidden world of gaming way back. And it became one of the most well-loved books, not only in my house, but many, many houses across the entire world, because at the time we were so confused. We were caught up in that first experimental generation of video games and kids who were playing so much, and the games had changed so much, and they weren't playing Pac-Man anymore like we did when we were growing up. And you could say that Olivia met me in that very dark place that I was in. I hadn't even met her yet, but she met me in that place and she brought the flashlight. I always say that. And I didn't meet Olivia till years later, but we bonded even way back before I ever met her. And so, Olivia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I tell you, you said it really well. I just am so happy to be here. And honestly, Melanie, it was providential that you got that book. And I feel like it's been that way with this message for everyone, really, is that it's a reaching out of someone else saying, here, listen to this message. And it's something that we all struggle with. And if you read PlayStation Nation, if any of your listeners have, they know that I struggle with it too. So it's almost as if none of us get to start with this back then. Mm-hmm. None of us got to start with this back then.
No.
Thankfully, now we have the research, we have Screen Strong and all that you're doing. So I'm really hopeful that a lot of young parents are getting this message from the very beginning.
Yes.
So that they can make these decisions and not be having to put on these huge brakes and backtrack like we did.
Oh. My goodness. And we were so blind. I mean, you were a little less blind at some point than me, but
I think for us, it hit earlier because of the world that we were in. You know, we were in a world of family resources. And so we were very in tune to that. And so very quickly we started seeing this is a problem, but we still didn't know why.
Yeah.
And so when you don't know why, it's really hard to make difficult decisions in your home that you know your children are going to be unhappy with.
Yeah.
And so once we started diving into the little bit of research that was there back then and we got the why, it wasn't easy. When I say easy, I just mean we knew we had to do it.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy to do with our children, but it was an easy decision to make for us. Yeah.
Because with the education came clarity.
Right.
You got really clear and you did such a wonderful job of explaining that. And I think the thing I love the most was that I felt like you could really relate. There were so many other parents I was talking to at the time and they looked at me like I was crazy, you know? And when I read your book, I'm like, oh my gosh, she's been living in my house for the last year.
I think everybody thought I was crazy too. So, yeah. You know, you, not everybody, but I, there were, there was a large amount of people that thought I was crazy too.
Sure.
And it was, sure. I always tell people, I'm so thankful that you have this message because you're much, much more bullheaded than I am.
Well, I got burned really bad. You almost got burned. I got burned. And so yeah. Maybe that's the difference, but yeah. Between your family and mine, how many children do we have altogether? I have 3 boys and a girl, and you have?
And I have 4 boys and 2 girls.
4 boys. Okay. So 4, 5, 6, 7. So between the two of us, we have 7 boys, and our topic today is going to kind of hover a little bit around those boys.
Yes,
a little
it bit. Will. True.
So yeah. We are seasoned. Mm-hmm. We have been through the jungle. Mm-hmm. We know what we're talking about.
Yes.
I always tell parents, if you're trying to learn how to potty train your kid, don't read any books. Just go find a mom who's done it really well and talk to her.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And a mom who wants to share her wisdom so that it's easier for you. And a mom who's a fun mom. I mean, honestly, we're fun moms. So we are not moms that are not having fun with our families. We're fun moms. And so we're fun moms that have decided to say no to something that's very fun for children, but it is harmful. And we're not, it's not the trade-off that we're willing to take. Yeah.
And we've said yes to so many other things. So I want to just start by saying that this is not just a boy issue, but today the issue with video games, we're going to focus more on boys, but I want to just say, I don't want, for our listeners out there, if you're listening and you're thinking, well, you know, I got 3 girls, it doesn't really apply to me. Please stop just for a minute. Do not walk away yet, because everyone needs to understand what video games do to kids, whether they're boys or girls. It doesn't matter. If you have boys or girls at any age, you want to stay and listen.
Well, and I know you're not here yet, Melanie, but your girls will marry a boy someday.
Yes.
So I have my 3 adult boys are all married to beautiful women inside and out who have thanked us for this decision that we made with our boys. And so you will want those girls to be aware of these things, because they will be picking someone someday to marry, and you want them to be aware of if the person they choose to marry has been in this world or not. Yeah.
And if they're currently a gamer, they need to understand all the dynamics behind it and what's happening. And so that's just what I was going to say. Whether you have girls or boys, it doesn't matter. You're going to need to understand this. Also, we know statistically now, which is different from when you wrote your book, that it's really about 50-50 as far as girls and boys that play. I think a few more boys actually play video games, but it's not like it used to be where girls, you know, really didn't care that much. Now it's really more. And that's also true with pornography as well. That statistic is 50-50. We used to say it leaned a little heavier on boys, but for some reason, and we know the reason, you know, it's 50-50. So I just want to, if you've got girls that don't play video games, please listen, because they're going to, like Olivia just said, they're going to have friends that are boys. They're going to have boyfriends. They're going to have husbands, and they're going to be having to deal with this issue. So before we get to our list of 10 things, I thought, you know, one thing that you and I have talked about before that is so helpful for parents, I want to start really quickly with a short list of common mistakes that parents make. And then I'm going to go through 10 things that I think it's really important for every family to understand about video games in particular. So you can chime in some. I'm going to throw out some of these biggest mistakes because I made all of them. I am very good at this list. So the first thing on the list is starting too early. Using screen time as a reward is another thing. I think a lot of us moms that are out there, you know, with video games, just, you know, everywhere you turn, there's some cute little game out there, and we start way too early. And the little games that are sort of benign that we think, you know, they are sort of the gateway drug to the bigger games. And so that's why that's such a big mistake. The other thing is not following your gut. I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't have a community around me until I got Olivia's book. I felt like all of a sudden I had a little community of people that understood what I was going through. But until then, I didn't have the courage to follow my gut on that. And I look back, and that was one of the biggest mistakes that I made. The other one was just creating easy access. And what I mean by that is, if you just have that game console out in easy view or in your child's room, like with any other addictive activity, access is always the problem. And I would highly recommend, even if you decide that you're going to have gaming as part of your life, package it up in the box, keep it in the attic, only pull it down on certain occasions if you want. Of course, I don't recommend that, but it's just, we have video games everywhere. I mean, they're everywhere, Olivia. We go to the dentist office and there's video games there and kids are playing. Of course, now they're on smartphones and everybody has a phone. The next thing was just using gaming as a babysitter. It was so easy for me with Adam to just let him be entertained and I didn't have to worry. I didn't really have to parent, right?
Yep. That's, I think, where we all, it's easy for us to do that with any kind of technology, of course, right? Mm-hmm. But the gaming world is so, such a draw for them that the time just gets eaten up. And it's just so easy for us to go there and let them have it because we have things to do. And I think out of this whole list, honestly, for me, that was the one I struggled with the most because I felt guilty afterwards, but it felt so good to be able to just have a quiet moment and get things done. And looking back, I wish I would have just said, listen, as a mom, you don't get quiet moments when your kids are around. So just engage with them until they go to bed or get out of the house every once in a while. But don't think that's going to work for you. Yeah.
No, that's a really good point. Or have them do whatever you're doing with you because it's just, it's in the long run, it's a whole lot easier. I think one of the biggest mistakes I made also was not paying attention to the ratings and actually not playing or watching what he was doing. And I think this is the mom problem. And I will just raise my hand over here. I'm so guilty of this. Adam was playing games that I'd never watched until years later. And I was just mortified. I was thinking, how in the world did I let this in my house? And I'm not trying to over exaggerate. I am so serious. If you pull up Call of Duty or Grand Theft Auto or even some of the things in Minecraft, certainly Fortnite, if you pull this stuff up and you actually sit with them and watch what they do for even 30 minutes, you will just know right away what you are supposed to be doing with this stuff in your house. Yeah. It's like, I would never let him watch R-rated movies.
Yep.
What was I thinking?
Well, I think ignorance is bliss in that way. Yeah. And so what we do is, and this is not a mistake that we made because again, we were so, surrounded with family stuff, you know, because my husband worked at a family organization that the ratings and the content were huge for us. And we knew, don't do that. But Melanie, you pick up the cover, you pick up the case of Call of Duty and you know what's in there.
Yeah, true.
Right? So but I think ignorance is bliss because we don't want to know what's in there, right? Yeah. Because they want it really bad. We don't have the energy to say no. And so we think, it'll be fine, even though it very much looks like they're killing people in this game.
Right. And I didn't understand the science at all. I was a nurse, graduated from Emory University, had lots of research behind me. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of things. And in fact, I was talking to another nurse today, and she said, you know, they never taught us any of this in nursing school. I'm like, I know. Yeah. But once you understand the science and it becomes so clear. So, and I believed a ton of the myths and I won't go into all these because these are just, they could go on and on. But I believe that if you had a boy, you had to game. He just had to game. Yes, that was just part of the DNA of our culture. I believed that it was a benign activity. I believed he was getting smarter by the minute. Boy, was that a joke. I believed he was making all these friends. No, he was not. He was meeting tons of people he didn't even know and would never even meet. It was just the strangest thing. I believed that he was going to binge and go crazy if I didn't, you know, let him game because when he went off to college, you know, this is what everybody told me back then. Oh, you got to let him do stuff. Otherwise they're going to binge and go nuts. And guess what? That's what he did anyway. He binged and went crazy in college. And if y'all know our story, he ended up dropping out his first year of college because he just didn't go to his classes because he stayed in his room and he gamed instead. So let's jump into our list. That was kind of a long introduction, but I think it's important to cover some of those things. And I hope that if you're listening, you can relate to some of those and know that we are not coming at this from a spirit of judgment at all. Mm-hmm. We're coming with information that could possibly save your child's life and certainly many other things in their life, including their relationship with you. So the first thing that I wish I had known before video games took over my oldest son's life, that's what this list is, okay? The first thing I wish I had known how much the game was going to change his brain. And Libby, I know that you dove into the research early on this, but even now today, there are so many, many more brain studies, MRIs, all the research that's being done right now on kids' brains and screens that it's telling us that this activity is making certain permanent changes to their brain. And it's all based on the stimulus overload, the intense action in especially the shooting games that tap into that fight flight response in a teenager's brain. The amygdala is overworked and this fight flight area in the brain is activated. So just imagine your child is in a fight flight state where, you know, he's very scared of being killed. And so what happens is your brain reacts to this and there's all sorts of brain chemicals that are being dumped and he's in a very chronically stressed state. And if I had to sum it all up into one little concept, I think that's it. I didn't realize how stressed from a neurochemical angle Adam was living in. It was a chronic stress. I mean, think about this. His character was going to die any minute. That is very stressful.
Well, and that's what the research says. If you want to make your child or any of us stressed to the highest point, make us think we're going to die any moment, right? Yes. I mean, that's what's going to raise. If something's going to happen like that, it's going to be fight or flight immediately for each one of us. And that's so they're doing that virtually over and over and over again.
Right.
And I don't know, it'd be interesting, Melanie, to talk to you about this. We never have, but if Adam still feels that sometimes, you know, in his world because he did it for so long.
Oh yeah. And he doesn't game right now, but other things I think that area of his brain is going to be more easily triggered quicker than it would have been if he hadn't grown up with having that triggered so much. And it's because what happens in childhood totally determines the rest of your life. And I just wish I had had any idea that this was changing his brain. And when they're gaming, their frontal cortex is not engaged. All right. It can't be because you're in fight flight. So when you're in fight flight and you're running from the bear, so to speak, you're not worried about your homework or your grocery list, right? Because that doesn't matter because you're about to die. So that frontal cortex, the judgment part of your brain is not being worked. You're not getting a workout there. And so this is what we noticed. This brain change would be when he was actually gaming, he would have a temper even during the game. Like if one of the little kids would walk by and he thought they were going to touch his laptop, he would haul off and hit him. And he probably didn't even know he was even doing this, but he was reacting. It was like a reflex reaction because he was so immersed. And if you talk to any parent who's ever raised a gamer, they will tell you the same thing. They will tell you they don't have to read one page of research to tell you that there's something wrong with their brain. Their brain is greatly affected. Now, there is tons of research, but all I have to tell you is you don't need research to be convinced. If you're living with a gamer, you're watching it happen right before your eyes. The games make your child a different person, especially during that time. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the other thing I think of, Olivia, with this, you know, it's taken so long, right, to convince the public that this is a thing. People, when I first started talking 8 years ago, oh no, this doesn't cause brain changes. That's just your son. That's just whatever. And it took so long. But you know what? It took this country 30 years or more, even more, to convince the public that smoking caused cancer.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And
yeah,
so
exactly.
It took, like, we, you know, people who were dying of cancer 30 years ago, well, you would think that was enough. Well, it wasn't enough. It took a long time. So if you're listening, please don't let it take that long in your house to act and to do something. And we're not, I don't want you to think that I'm fear mongering or I'm being negative. I'm not. Just like I would tell you that what we know now about seatbelts is that seatbelts save lives. What we know about sunscreen helps us, you know, and prevents skin cancer. We know smoking, if you can prevent smoking in your kids, this is not fear mongering. This is giving you the medical facts. And so we know now for sure that excessive gaming will harm certain areas of your development and certain areas of the brain. So that leads me to the next thing. The second thing that I wish I had known, boy, if I had, oh my God, all these things are really important. But this one, I had no idea. And this one was equally as discounted at the time as the first thing I just told you about brain development. So the second thing is that video games can cause addiction, and video gaming is an addiction. It's an addictive activity. So there is a book called Dopamine Nation. I don't know if you've ever read this. It's kind of a new book, Olivia, by Anna Lemke. And she just does a wonderful job of explaining dopamine in the brain. And she, I've listened to podcasts that she's done, and she's talked about video games and all that. But I just want, the second thing you've got to understand is that video gaming is an addictive activity. And the reason why, I'm going to explain it really quick. Addiction, first of all, is defined as the continued and compulsive behavior or consumption of a substance despite its harm to yourself and to others. So think about that. When your child is gaming, the quality of their life is starting to decrease, right? And what happens is that the list of things that will bring your son, and we'll just say boys today, we're going to use son. It could be daughter, but I'm just going to use son. Mm-hmm. That the list of things that is now bringing your son pleasure is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. His world is getting smaller and smaller because normal things don't bring him pleasure anymore.
Right.
And he has no motivation to fill his downtime because he's so used to this dopamine. So let's talk about the dopamine for a second. All addiction is dopamine driven. The more dopamine, the more addictive the activity or substance could be. So no one falls into an addiction without chronic overstimulation and increased dopamine as a result of that. So what is dopamine? I think just for our audience, dopamine is the brain chemical. It makes us feel happy. It does a number of other things, but that's how we can understand it the best. We all need dopamine to be motivated to do anything. We can't live without dopamine. In fact, at any hour of the day, your dopamine level will be up a little bit and down a little bit and up a little bit. And your body is constantly, your brain is constantly balancing the pleasure pain center in your brain. And this is in the reward area of your brain. So if your dopamine is too low, you know, Olivia, you won't be motivated to get up and do the dishes or make dinner.
Right? Yes, exactly. Yep, that's right.
Oh my goodness. And it does, like I said, it changes and it kind of fluctuates. But dopamine affects the reward center in the brain, which is constantly trying to balance. So where that reward center is where our pleasure and our pain center is located. And we're constantly balancing it. So if we get too many rewards, then it balances, it teeters toward pain. If we get too much pain, it will teeter toward pleasure. So it's constantly kind of going back and forth. And our goal is to keep this balanced. So the kick here with teenagers is that in the brain of a teenager, their dopamine, it's more sensitive, they say. The teens are more sensitive to dopamine during the teen years. And this is why 90% of all addictions in the adult years start in the teenage years. So think about this, Olivia, not that you would, or not that I would, but if you or I played a video game, we would not get the same amount of dopamine that our kids do.
Yep.
Right. So this is why it's hard for parents to understand, because they're thinking, well, what's the big deal? Like, this is just nothing. Like, this isn't very fun. But for your child, especially your boy, this is really fun. And he's feeling the dopamine at a higher level. So we all have a baseline level of dopamine. And I'm just going to explain how this works. And if you have a piece of paper in front of you, I'm going to grab one because I'm going to do it too. Draw a rectangle. And then I want you to just draw a line across horizontally. And that line is our baseline level of dopamine. So during the day, we have a baseline level of dopamine. Dopamine is what keeps us going. It keeps us eating. Of course, we have to eat in order to survive and all the things that we have to do. So that baseline level, we want to put healthy things on there. So I'm going to write some things that, like, for my kids, like, they love playing baseball. So hitting a baseball is a good, healthy, dopamine producing activity. Eating a good meal is a good one. Catching a fish. So funny. When my middle schooler, when he was in middle school, he came in one night and explained the joy of, there's nothing that exists in the earth, he said, that is more fun than feeling the tug of a fish on your fishing line.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So he was getting dopamine from that. Maybe they won a spelling bee, and maybe your child won the math contest, or asking a girl out on a date, you get that little dollop of dopamine, or maybe you figured out a piano piece, all these things that are just giving us really healthy, natural, everyday dopamine. So at the top of that line, like above that line, I want you to write some things that you get a spike in dopamine. So like eating a donut for me. Okay, I'll tell you right now, donuts are really good, but I can't eat them every day. But, you know, my brain would get a little spike of dopamine. In fact, if I drive by the Krispy Kreme and the hot now light is flashing, I probably get a little dopamine from that anticipation of what that might mean. So what do you have? What's like above? What's something that's above your line that you get some good dopamine from?
If you're talking about a high level of dopamine, I'd say probably same thing, some goodies. Yeah.
Goodies, like chocolate, right?
Food. Yeah, exactly. And even just driving by, like you said, or driving by a really fun restaurant that I like. I'm like,
interesting how it has to do with food, right?
Yes.
So that's really good. We know that chocolate actually increases your dopamine like by 55%. It gets you above that baseline. I think some moms would probably put shopping up there. Like we like to get our little deals when we go shopping.
Yes. Yes.
So common things that are above this baseline level are sex, porn, drugs, alcohol, gambling, video gaming. And I just want you to visualize this. If you're listening, I want you to visualize that those are the things that spike dopamine. Fascinating. The research, Andrew Huberman talks about this. He's a neuroscientist, MD, and he has a bunch of podcasts. And he talks about how nicotine is 100%, sex is 100%, meaning over baseline, chocolate 55%. He says video games can be up to 300% over baseline.
Wow.
Cocaine is only 225% over baseline. So a very interactive game that has all the things in it can raise your child's dopamine so far over his baseline level that now you're starting to see what I'm going to say, that the normal things in life just don't measure up. They're just not fun. And boy, did I see this with Adam. And I didn't even know what I was seeing. But I was like, why doesn't he want to go outside and play? His friends would come over into our backyard and Adam wouldn't even want to go out there. It was because he was getting so much more dopamine over his baseline. And the problem, the thing that happens is you cannot live above the baseline for very long.
Yes.
Because what goes up must come down. The body always seeks balance. So there's this push and pull and push and pull, but they keep playing because they keep thinking, oh, it's going to be more fun. It's going to be more fun. It's just like any other addiction, just like the person with the slot machine, you know, they just keep because they're trying to get to that higher level, but at some point you have to come down.
And well, and what's so sad is then what you're doing is you're activating that in your teenage brain and junior high brain, whatever they start. Once it's activated, their body and their brain is going to need that to find pleasure in life. And so, yes, maybe they'll still do some of the things you want them to do.
Right.
But I promise you, they're waking up in the morning and they're thinking about that game because they want that dopamine high again. Even it's not their fault. They can't help it.
Yes. I want parents to understand right now. Yes. The parents that are listening, I want you to understand that you have no control over this. He doesn't have any control over it. This is what is happening. And I'm not vilifying all video games. The industry has a right to do whatever they want. But as parents, we also have a duty to understand what's happening. It's just like with smoking, we don't need to take down big tobacco, even though some people would love to, but I don't need to let my kids smoke because I did the research and I understand what that is going to do, what that nicotine is going to do. By the way, nicotine is also, of course, very addictive. So just like you said, when they are used to that high level of dopamine and it's chronic and it goes on and on and on, this tolerance sets in. So now everything is kind of reset to this really high level. So now they need more.
Yes.
They need more. So that's why they go from Minecraft to Fortnite to Call of Duty to Grand Theft Auto. They have to go up the scale to get the more and more stimulation. And then, of course, they end up many times with pornography and drugs because they have to keep getting more. We know that what comes up must come down. So what happens is now there is this decreased pleasure in simple things in life, like going to school and talking to your teachers and getting an A on your math quiz that day.
Exactly.
Like, none of this stuff matters.
Yeah.
Because, and like Adam says in one of his interviews, a number of years ago, he did an interview. It's in our Connect Plus group on our website. And he says, there is nothing in life that will bring the same amount of dopamine when you are a teenager. And I understand it so much better even now, mm-hmm. after doing so much of the research on dopamine. And then what happens is you get depressed because if you're not playing, which, you know, I don't think you can play 24 hours a day. And right. so when you get off your game, now what? Everything is dull. Mm-hmm. Everything is dim. It just isn't rich. It's just not fun. It's just kind of depressing. And so I want to read something really quick from Anna Lemke. She was on a podcast and I jotted down this teeny bit of the transcript. I just want to read this because she says it Great. So well. So this is a quote by Anna Lemke, the gal that wrote Dopamine Nation. I see a lot of young people who, for example, spend most of their waking hours playing video games, and they come to me and they say, I'm anxious and depressed. I'm majoring in computer science and I hate it. I thought I would like it. You know, if I could only just find that one thing that I was really meant to do, my life would be so much better. Mm. So what she says is, she says, my first intervention for those people that come to me, these kids that come to me that I see in my clinical care is, you have it backwards. You are waiting for that thing to pull you out of the video game world, and you're never going to find it as long as you are playing video games, mm. because video games are so powerfully dopaminergic, meaning they're full of dopamine. You are playing video games that are so powerful that you have this distorted sense of pleasure and pain, and you will not be able to find that thing that you enjoy.
Wow.
This is so fascinating. And the final thing she says, the intervention is abstinence from video games, resetting your reward pathway, and starting with that level balance of your baseline dopamine. And she says, I've seen this over and over for 20 years. I've seen it so many times that all of a sudden, it's like, and this is what the kids will say, oh, wow, my computer class is interesting this quarter. Yes. She said, you can now experience pleasure and reward in a way that you couldn't when you were bombarded with these high dopamine drugs. And that's what she calls video games.
Well, and I think that's good to say, but to the young moms that are listening, I think that for them to know, because I know with my boys, especially my oldest, who has the most personality, the personality that is the most drawn to that right. kind of thing. He would say to you that even now, because dopamine is a drug, right?
Yeah.
And everybody that has done drugs or been on any kind of an addictive thing for a period of time, even later in their life, they have to be very careful, right?
Yes.
To not go back to them, because those drug memories are there and yeah. your brain is very smart and it will remember that was nice and easy for it, you know?
Yeah.
And not only that, but you pruned away things because you didn't use it when you were young. You pruned away things that should be there.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to, yes. I mean, my son, he's an amazing young man now. He's married, has two children, and he works hard, but he will still tell you, I have to be very careful because my brain wants the quick fix. Right? It wants to know, okay, I'll work hard today, but what's my reward at the end of the day? And he doesn't game anymore, but he knows that, why do I feel that way? Why do I need a reward? Right? Well, it's because for many years as a young child, between like 8 and 12 is really all that he played. His brain quickly got used to that reward. And so I think you can avoid all of that for your children by just not giving it to them until their brain is developed. And then they can choose whether they want to play or not. And they won't get as addicted and they won't get as drawn to it because their brain is more developed at that
right.
point.
Right. And that is the key to solving this problem is prevention, right? Yep. It's always better. And it's because what we know about brain development and everything that you just said. And I don't want to, you know, say that you can't fix it. If your child
no,
if you're listening
you
and your child is 12 or he's 15, it's hard, but you need to understand what you're dealing with. You are not dealing with an obstinate child who's just being mean and ugly to you. You are dealing with dopamine. And we love dopamine, right? It's great. We need it. We can't live without it. You'll die without dopamine. But we need to understand that for our purposes of talking about dopamine for this video game addiction, dopamine is sort of the villain in our story because it's just too high.
It's the amount of dopamine is really what it is. It's right. It's the fact that they're getting so much, and the games are, like you said, 300%
over baseline.
So the games are designed, because it's a money-making thing, to get to every part of their brain and get that dopamine going. And so, I mean, 20 minutes a day, Melanie, is too much.
Oh yeah.
20 minutes a day is too much for their brain.
Yeah.
And so you think, well, then they can't play at all. Well, maybe they could play once a week if you wanted. Like, maybe you could get it out like a board game and they can play for an hour and then you can put it away. But then I say to a parent, is that worth it for you? Do you really want to own all that stuff for an hour a week, right?
Well, I think what happens when you do that, that's a really good point. That's a really good question. But I think what happens is that they get that taste of it and then they remember it and then they play it in their head over and over. For a child who has any propensity toward having a struggle with video games, that little tiny bit of moderation is not going to work.
Right.
Because it triggers the craving.
Right.
And that's what dopamine, even more than the good feeling, it sets the memory. And so that's why when we hear, like, if your son hears the song, you know, the Call of Duty song or the Minecraft song, they're going to get a little dollop of dopamine because they're going to associate all those cues and triggers with that good feeling of the huge amount of dopamine. And that's what Anna talks so much about in her book. It's complicated, but then it's simple, right? It's not that hard to understand this. And I think this has been the missing link for our culture. I don't think that moms and dads understand this dopamine reward pathway. I don't think they understand the role that this plays in how a video game can derail your son. Because what happens when he gets this reoccurring dopamine, he does become addicted to it. So no longer are we going to apologize and say, well, that's sort of a strong word to use because it's a scientific word. It is exactly what happens.
It would be as if I said to someone right now and they said, well, first, it would be as if someone said to me right now, you know, cigarettes are addictive. And I said, oh, that's a strong word. You wouldn't want to use cigarettes and addiction. And they would look at me like I'm crazy. What do you mean?
Yeah.
It's research-based that it's addictive. It's the same thing with gaming. The
same thing.
Only more harmful because of the amount of time and how quickly young people's brains are getting addicted to it.
Yeah. And once you understand that a teenage brain is even more highly sensitive to dopamine than our brain, then that just seals the deal for me. I mean, if I had known any one of these things, but this one would have been so good for me to know. So if you're listening and you have little kids or you have middle school kids or whatever ages they are, please start today and understand that this dopamine interaction is the underlining problem with video games and social media and smartphones and all the digital things out there. And again, that's the way they're designed. So we just have to be super clear on this and understand. So the third thing that I wish I had known, besides the brain and besides the addiction, was the lack of empathy and this increased aggression that this was going to cause in my child. Sure. This sounds really powerful, right? It sounds, oh, this could be a little scary. It is. I did not know that playing a video game could make my son more aggressive and could trigger this area in his brain that kind of shuts down his empathy. And the book that I think is so important about this is This Assassination Generation by Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman. It is the most wonderful book. If you have a boy who is a gamer, please read Assassination Generation. Don't worry about the title. It's wonderful. I think every family who has a boy should read this book. He goes through and explains psychologically what happens in a boy's brain. And so the lack of empathy is what I want us to think about as parents. It is our job to teach our kids empathy. And when you realize that even on Fortnite, for example, that your kid is getting on Fortnite every day, and or even once a week, it doesn't even matter. And he's killing his best friend every day, shooting his head off. Think about what has to happen in a young kid in order to do that. They get points for causing pain and suffering in others.
Yes.
Let's just call it what it is. They're getting rewarded for killing their friends. And you might say, oh, well, it's just the little cartoon character. No. In your child's brain, it is their friend. they know it is represented, a person's represented there. And the American Academy of Pediatrics says that cartoon violence causes the same amount of aggression as regular violence. They view all that. This is research. This is science. This is not anybody's opinion.
Well, and they also learn, I think, that this is how you deal with problems, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So then something irritates them or something happens and they get angry rather than learning to work through this or think about it. Their immediate reaction is going to be, like you said, in a game, they just get rid of it.
Right.
And so I think when a real problem happens in life, their fight or flight goes in just like it would in a game, because that's how their brain is used to dealing with conflict. And immediately they push a child down or hit them or whatever they need to do to get it to be over with, like they do in a game.
That's right. Because they don't have the collaboration of sitting down and working through the problem. They just hurt or kill the other person. And this is very clear to a kid. Whereas for us, we understand that, well, you know, it's just a TV show or it's just a video game or what, but kids don't see it that way. They are practicing and what Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman says is they are classically conditioned. So they're being conditioned to do this. And what Dan Siegel says is when a child is engaged in video games, the part of the brain that experiences empathy disengages, because you can't have empathy. You can't go feel sorry for everybody. You got to kill them. You got to win, right?
You're building your kingdom.
That's right. And so there's also this desensitization. And we know that from research that death is a much better subject for screens, TV, the news, the video games than life, right?
Right.
It's evident in everything we see online, even on social media. It's like all the bad stuff, you know, gets a whole lot more views. So our kids are being desensitized. I don't think we can argue this. I don't think anybody even argues this. I think we know. And what happens though, is that we see this play out in life when they can't play with friends anymore. Maybe they're in first grade and they go to school and they're fighting. Like you said, they're not learning how to work things out. The area that I see it a lot when I talk to families is with the area of animals, because, you know, animals, you have to be very empathetic. And when a child is mean to an animal, that's a really bad sign. That remorse muscle is not being developed in their brain. And so there's all sorts of stories around this. We just have to be clear that we understand that video games will not build your child's empathy. Yep. And video games will increase that aggression. And so the goal is to increase awareness of others around your child, right? And to rebuild that empathy area and to discover natural joy and joy in helping other people. And I don't mean to make it sound like, you know, unicorns and butterflies, but it is our job as parents and moms, especially, to work on this empathy muscle in our kids' brains. And I just had no idea it would even be a thing.
Yep.
The fourth thing is that I wish I had known how lonely playing video games is for a child.
Yes. And you don't, it's funny because of course every commercial for video games, it's seven kids playing all together, right? And look how the social thing is so good for the kids, but it's really not, because most of the time they're playing by themselves. And even when they're playing together, they're alone together. So they're each playing their own thing, even though they're together. So it's not something that promotes friendships or conversation or interaction at all.
This point almost just makes me cry, because community is so important, and we have to teach our kids to learn how to have community and how to have friends and build deep friends and what it means to be a friend and how you have a friend. And playing video games, you are not doing that. And I grieve over this probably more than anything for my oldest, because I compare it now to my younger two, and they have so many friends. And I mean deep friends that they've had for so many years. And so, mom, if you're listening and you think that your son won't have any friends if they don't have their game, you're incorrect. I don't want to judge you, but I just want to say I've been there. I've been on both sides. And they will be so lonely. Up front, maybe it seems like they have a friend or whoever, and their little group is playing whatever, but it's not rich friendships that are being built? Because we know that you have to have life experiences together in person to build those memories and to build those rich friendships. And the book, The Village Effect, is really good. So if you're looking for a good book to read about community and the importance of all that, I liked that book, The Village Effect. Your goal is to choose real life friends over video game friends. Mm-hmm. And Libby, I don't know if this was true for you with your son.
I would say yes. And I think even the friendships that he did have that were based around gaming, they were gaming friendships. That's all they were.
Right.
So
right.
That's why you think, oh, well, he's got these friends. Well, what do? They only play games together because right. That's all they know to do together. And that's really their only activity that they all enjoy. So right. He had, when we stopped the gaming in our house, he began to get new friends that were in band, new friends that were in his math class or whatever other things that he enjoyed. But honestly, up until then, the friends he had during that period where he was playing were all gamers, and he was finding himself drawn more toward those kids who that's all they wanted to do was game because it was just easier, and that's what he wanted to spend his time doing too. So even if they get friends and you think, oh, they're playing together, it's actually just friendship based on something where if you rip the game out of that, they're not even going to know what to say to each other because they don't know each other that well.
That's a really good point. It's like, does their friendship exist without the game? Well, some of you are out there listening. You're going to say, yeah, they play with their best friends. How much time are they spending together fishing versus right. on a game playing side by side, which is sort of like sandbox play. We call it parallel play, like you said right. a minute ago. It's not even real interactive play. They're like yep. two little toddlers playing in a sandbox when they're on their yep. video game.
Exactly.
I was just going to ask you, did your son have, like Adam had these so-called friends that were like in another country, like that we don't even know if they were even real, you know, 15-year-old boys. They could have been 60-year-old men.
Absolutely. And I think those are absolutely not friends. I mean, that's the problem. You know, right. if you have a friend in another state and all you do is talk to that friend on an online game, they're not your friend. And again, it's fulfilling that need in you for friendship, quote unquote, but it's not being met with an embodied person, right?
No.
So it's virtually filling that world in a fake world. So no, yes. Kyle did not experience that because he did not play any online games at all.
Okay.
So that was never something that he did. And so that he was always playing either with his brother by himself or with actual friends in person.
Right.
But again, those friends that he played with in person, that was what their friendship was about, was the gaming, not much else.
Yeah, but that's interesting to say. So if you subtract the gaming, what do they have left?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And we learned with our younger boys after we figured this out, and we have a game-free home now, by the way, for everyone listening. We don't have video games in our house. And we learned that they have so much more fun playing in the backyard and, like I said, going four-wheeling, riding their bikes, going fishing, playing baseball, playing basketball in the driveway. All these things are just so much richer. And the dopamine, remember what we talked about earlier, that you've got to keep this baseline dopamine going. And you've got to be very careful as a parent what you're going to allow to spike and what activities you're going to allow. Like, you wouldn't allow your child to just sit down and watch pornography, you know, just 1 hour every week, right? That would not be good at
right.
all. We know that's
yep.
not good. And, or to drink a beer or to drink something or how about just smoke pot once a week? No, we're not going to allow any of that. And the reason why we're not going to allow it is because it's addictive. It raises their dopamine level. And then it's going to be really hard to get them regulated again. So you
yep.
have to look at gaming like that. And the other thing is, quite frankly, I don't want my kid, I mean, no offense, okay, I don't want to sound like this is offensive, but I don't want my kids hanging out with gamers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want, and they're not bad people, but I don't want my kids hanging out with people that are smoking pot either. And I mean, that's an addictive thing, and eventually they're going to want to do that. And, you know,
right.
we kind of become the people. And again, I don't want anybody to hear this wrong, but you have to be careful who your kids hang out with and what they're doing and the activities that their peers are doing, because they will copy and they will do. And this is age old. This isn't something we're making up. Your kids kind of become the company they keep. And we want to try to help them make good choices
mm-hmm.
in that area.
We want them to have balanced friends.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And my boys now, they have friends that are gamers, but they don't game with them, you
right.
know, and they're they have other things they do in their life, that they play baseball or they run track or something, you know, they have other interests. So that's a real key when we're looking at this dopamine.
Yes.
So the fifth thing that I wish somebody had told me, I had no idea.
No, this one's actually new to me. I did not know that about this.
It's about the gambling effect and the money that is spent on this gaming world. I had no idea. But then when I talked to Adam later about all this, he goes, oh yeah, you know, you can spend so much money in your video game. You can level up, you buy all the skins in Fortnite, for example, you can buy levels in different games. I didn't understand any of this, but it makes sense that this is how the gaming industry is monetizing. Because don't you wonder sometime, you know, we know the video game industry is bigger than even the social networking industry. It's $180 billion last year. It is wow. More than the NFL. It's more than Hollywood. So, you know, I used to always wonder, well, a lot of these games are free. So how can that be? Well, this is how that happens. Your son is in there figuring out, you know, has your son actually ever asked you for a credit card, Olivia? Yours probably hasn't, because way back in that day, this was probably not going on, but this is what's happening now. I had a mom call me to say that her son had charged over $2,000 on her credit card. And he was in, I think, Madden Football, and he was buying players. And the way you buy players to build your team, evidently, I may not be saying this all perfectly right, is you buy like packs of like, you know, cards, and you buy, and it's like, it's gambling because you don't know what you're going to get in that pack. Yes. And this child had just been, he didn't make the football team at school. He was very upset. And so he was going to make his Madden football team the best team ever. So he spent all this money. And so we know that even just in 2019 alone, the average Fortnite player spent $82. Okay. In Fortnite, I guess that was like a year or something. League of Legends, the players spent $92. So they're spending money to get things in the game. And these are called microtransactions. And it was $93 billion. $93 billion on microtransactions. That is, I think they said, 8 times more money than they spend on the actual game themselves. So there's a whole underbelly to this that you may not understand as a parent. You need to check it out. You need to talk to your kids about this. Are you spending money on the game? There's all sorts of transactions that happen. The sixth thing that I surely didn't know, oh my goodness, I had no clue, was the dark side, I like to call it, of video gaming. Now, again, I'm not trying to be over-exaggerating here, but I'm going to tell you, mom and dad, if you're listening, the pornography world is alive and well and kicking on the video game world out there, in the video game world. And the way that this happens, so we have predators, we have pornography, we have all these things that are chasing our kids. And the way it happens is through the forums. So you have gaming forums, which your kid gets on, Discord, whatever the forum is, and they're talking to other players. And last month, a mom called me that she was one of the moms like me and you that just didn't understand all this. And she was completely mortified when she found out that her, I think he was 9-year-old son, was playing some game, and he was in the forum, and an older kid dropped a Pornhub video for everyone to watch in the forum.
Wow.
So her 9-year-old was kind of freaking out over the Pornhub, you know, video. And this mom was so clueless. You know, and so this is the number six here, is there is a dark side. You have to be very careful. You don't need to be scared about this. You need to understand this, that when they are exposed to certain games, they're going to also be exposed to the forums. They're going to go to the YouTube channels. They're going to do all the other things that are kind of connected.
And no one's watching those forums. Like, there's nobody supervising those things. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. And as a result of all of this, I feel like the best way I can explain it is it breaks down the protective factors in your child's life. There's shame involved with this. There's guilt involved. And then what happens, the secrets start and all this private secret life starts happening. Even for a 10-year-old, it's a lot for them to handle. Yes. This whole dark side. And in the book, Breaking the Trance, we've had them on our show before. There's a little section in there that talks about the physical problems with video games, which I had no idea. I should have known that it's not normal for a teenager to sit for 8 hours in front of a computer and not go move and play outside.
I know.
One of the things that they talk about in there is this low testosterone and the weak, they call it muscle weakness that happens when boys are not moving enough. Mentally, they're great. Cognitively, you know, their grades aren't there. They are not motivated to do their homework. They're not motivated to read. I think reading is the first thing to go when your kids start gaming a lot.
Yes.
Their emotional quotient, their EQ is not good. They really don't find a purpose in the real world anymore. Everything is shifting over to their gaming world. And then, of course, like I just said, the predators, the porn, all that stuff that you may not realize that your child is being exposed to. And so you may be thinking, well, Melanie, you know what? You know, I don't let my kids play Call of Duty and I don't let them play Grand Theft Auto. Well, let me tell you that even if you go to Google right now, and I've said this before on the pornography podcast, that if you type in the word Minecraft and you type in sex, you will get just a huge number of videos and sites and all sorts of images about Minecraft sex. So you can't worry just about the games that you think you don't allow. You have to worry about the ones that you are allowing and what's happening in those games. And like I said, a lot of it is in the actual form. I know Roblox is the one where we've also seen a lot of problems in that.
Interesting.
Yes, that is a huge problem because there's no way to say, well, you can't have weird, you know, 20-year-olds coming in to drop stuff to your 10-year-old. So it's you know, you would never take your kids downtown and let them hang out in an arcade with 25-year-old kids, right? So I don't know what I was thinking. Well, I know what I was thinking. I just wasn't thinking because I had no idea any of this was in a video game.
Well, exactly. I think, again, ignorance is bliss. And so you might hear your child say, yeah, I play with other people. But you don't take it anywhere past that and realize, what? I'm letting my child play with people I don't even know online, right?
Exactly.
What could be happening? And so we're just asking, you're giving them the information. And you're saying, parents, don't ignore your gut.
Right.
When you have that thought and you think, wait, they're doing this, follow it through. And you would never drop your children off downtown to hang out with people they don't know. And you would never want them online hanging out with people you don't know.
And how did I miss this? Like, I don't know how I missed it, but I had no idea that pornography was so rampant. And I know that the porn industry, even a couple of years ago, I did a TV spot on this, how the porn industry is really gearing toward video gamers because they know that is the marketing that needs to take place because those gamers are their next customers. And we also know from the dopamine science that pornography is sort of the next thing, especially when you're a teenage boy, right? This is all very new and novel and different and stimulating. And so in your gaming, in fact, something happened last week with a mom that called me that said in Roblox, her child was there and he was in the forum talking and someone dropped a video, a naked video, porn video of his girlfriend. Like, and so then you're dealing with pedophile porn, right?
Yeah.
That this kid, you know, mom somehow found out about it. And so again, this is not to fear monger or overreact. This is the fact. This is what's happening. And we have to understand this whole picture. You can't make a decision of what you're going to allow your kids to do if you don't understand all the angles. You don't have to become an expert on everything, but you have to understand the far-reaching effects of some of these darker things.
And I think it just makes it easier for parents to say, listen, when you talk to your kids about this, you have reasons.
Yeah.
You have reasons and they're very good reasons. And so you can talk to them about, hey, I'm protecting you. These are the reasons that we're not playing these games right now. These are the reasons that we're not going online with other people. And so you have ammunition in your pocket basically to say, hey, this is good. This is all good. And it doesn't mean that someday in your life, if you want to play a video game, that you can't play a video game. But right now, this is not good for your brain. And these are the reasons. And it's science. So it's just like saying to them, we're not going to let you have a cigarette. These are the reasons, right? It's the same thing.
Very, very similar. In fact, it's so parallel. It's not funny. I mean, it's so parallel with that because they're also very addicting, of course, too.
Right. Exactly.
So the seventh thing that I wrote down that I wish I had known was that Adam was not really playing. I thought gaming was like just a game. How silly of me to think that.
How naive of us.
What was I thinking? I thought, well, kids have to play. Kids love to play. They have to play. They have to play to, you know, brain development and all this kind of stuff. But gaming is not true play. It's not. And if you get the book Play by Stuart Brown, that really opened my eyes to all this. He has a whole chapter on this in his book. But just understanding what true play is, and I'm not talking about just toddlers. I'm not talking about five-year-olds. I'm talking about 15-year-olds still need to play. You and I, Olivia, still need to play. Everybody needs to play to have a healthy brain. So your video game is not creative play. Like we said a minute ago, it's sandbox. A lot of the games are sandbox play. They're parallel. They're not really, you know, playing side by side. I mean, they're playing side by side. They're not interacting. And so creative play is when the child uses his own imagination to create and innovate. This is not happening on a video game. And some of y'all are listening saying, oh, well, they build things on Minecraft. Well, yes, but it's all in the confines of whoever designed that game. That was not your child. Your child did not design Minecraft. So they are not using their imagination. It's the same thing that if your child reads Harry Potter before he sees the movie, he's going to have a whole creative thing worked out in his brain about the characters, and he's going to have invented that himself. But if he sees the movie first and then he reads it, he will forever only have the movie characters in his mind. Does that make sense?
Yes, exactly.
So your child is not playing. It's not true play. It doesn't qualify for true play. Plus, the other thing that Stuart Brown says, true play never involves hurting other people. And I think that is a brilliant way to put it. That in true play, if someone gets hurt, what happens? Play stops. And we go take care of that person. But in a video game, somebody gets hurt, you get points, you win the game. It's a very twisted, distorted thing. So just realize that this is not true play.
Right.
You can call it whatever you want, but it's, the kid isn't playing. And so it's so deceiving because it's a game. I hate it. I just hate it that it's called a game, because that really threw me.
So true.
I just, and then I thought, well, he, you know, it's a hobby, like playing any other game, you know, playing Monopoly or whatever. No, it is not. It is the furthest thing away from any other play activity. And, you know, then it replaces the desire and the motivation to want to do all those rites of passage type of play activities that your children should be doing when they are kids.
Yes.
So the eighth thing on my list, and I know you can totally relate to this one, and I know everybody listening, in fact, this could be probably the one they relate to the most. I wish I had known how much gaming was going to disrupt our family life.
Yes. So much so that even without all of the other things that you've talked about, which are in a way so much more serious than this one, gaming will disrupt your family life. Even if you try to say, we're just going to manage it, it will still disrupt. Even if you try to manage it with all of this in mind, with all of that in mind, it will be so disruptive to your life. And it will not be a fun thing to manage, really. And it's because of all these other reasons is why. That's why. Because of all the things you've just talked about is why it disrupts your home so much. And it's just, in my mind, got to the point where it's not even worth it. It's not even worth it to try to manage it.
Right.
Because it disrupts my relationship with my children. It pulls them away from me. And I don't want that.
And just your day-to-day flow. And the you know, I hate to say argument and yelling and all that. I mean, we didn't scream in our house or anything like that, but there was this undertone thing that would happen all the time. Adam would come home from school. He'd get on his game. My husband would call and say, he better not be on that game when I get home. I would be like, okay, let me see what I can do. I'm setting the timer. I'm going down. I'm getting him off. I'm trying to get him off. He's not getting off. And then it builds, and the pressure builds and the tension builds. And then guess what? All the other kids in the house, you know, they're getting the short end of the stick, because now everybody's all on stress and we're all kind of this nervousness going on in our house. And this is what I'm talking about. It's like living with an alcoholic or living with another problem. It is, I had no idea when I said yes to those video games that what I was in for was this huge conflict on a daily basis. And it wasn't like we were yelling all day. That's not what it was. It's that right. underlining thing where I know he has to do his homework, but he's not. He's doing his game. I know he has to do this. He's not mowing the lawn. I know he has to do. And it's like, I'm the bad guy. I'm like yep. the cop. I call myself the gaming cop. Mom, I hated that job. If I had even an inkling that that was even going to be a thing, I never would have allowed this. Like you said, we had a lot of other reasons too, but the disruption of the flow of your peaceful home is not worth any of it.
Because, and you said it so well, I mean, you say that it's hard to manage a dopamine producing machine.
Yeah.
That's what you're trying to manage in your home.
That's right.
And so that's why it's disrupting. So it's not worth it. It's not worth it to try to manage that. And again, it's not your children's fault. It's you against them. It's the parent against this dopamine producing machine. They want the dopamine. They want that over you because that makes them feel a lot better.
Yeah.
So you can't even blame your kids. You can't be like, why won't you mow the lawn? Well, you gave me this game, Mom, so I'd rather do this.
That's right. You know? That's exactly right. And no, I do call it a dopamine producing machine. And so Mom, I want you to out there, I want you to listen, and Dad too, that release this idea that this has anything to do with your kid. Cause it doesn't. It doesn't. It's behind every gamer problem and whatever is the parent, you know, that allowed it. Like, we have to release them. We cannot be mad at them. We can be frustrated ourselves, which once I learned all this, boy, I had to deal with my own feelings around all this because it was really, really frustrating. But you know what I realized, and I'm just going to unpack this as we go through the summer and I do more teaching and all on this, but you know what I realized? This is a huge, huge point. And so if you're listening and you're doing the dishes, stop the dishes right now. I want you to hear this. Everything we've talked about, this dopamine and the power of dopamine and the power of that pleasure pain balance in our reward center applies to Mom and Dad too. It applies to me. And Olivia, I'm just going to confess right here on the air that I believe that my issue, and I don't think I'm alone in this, and you can probably relate to this. I think I got dopamine when I gave my son the games because it made him so happy. Mm-hmm. Think That's about this. Thought. I think if I looked at my baseline dopamine that we just drew in our paper, I would say things I do for my kids that make them happy give me dopamine. Mm-hmm. If they're happy, I'm happy.
Well, and I'll say too, for me, fun, now that you said that, fun makes me happy. I'm a fun person.
Fun.
And so I like when we're having fun together. And I thought, this is great. Look at my kids are having so much fun.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yes.
I think I'm just, as I unpack all this dopamine thing, I'm thinking, why did I do that? Well, I did it because he was happy as a clam and I want my kids to be happy. And you know, don't you hate it when they're not happy? So I didn't want the pain of him not being happy. So I wanted the dopamine of him being happy. And so I'm just going to say, if you're listening, just kind of have a self-reflective moment on that and see what part of it that we are contributing. And I don't want anybody to get their feelings hurt. I'm not trying to be judgmental. I'm just telling you, this hit me when I was putting these notes together. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm not immune to dopamine either. I mean, sure. I love it when my kids are happy. I love it when I make cupcakes like I'm getting ready to do when we finish this because of something that is fun going on right now. So I'm getting ready to make cupcakes. And you know why I'm doing that? Not because me, because they're going to love the cupcakes.
Right? That's right. That's exactly right. I love that.
So anyway, this whole thing about disrupting the joy in our home was not ever told to me. And I wish somebody had told me. So I will tell you right now that if you allow gaming at any level, it's going to disrupt some joy in your home.
Yes. And I will tell you right now that all moms are nodding their head because they know this already.
Yeah.
It's just that they've been managing it and just hearing from you and us giving them permission to make changes so they don't have to have that anymore is going to be such a blessing.
It's
to
just
them.
Heaven on earth. It's just a wonderful thing. So really quick, we're running out of time. So number nine, I thought that number nine was that the lost potential for all the other things that he could have done. And if I had known that gaming was going to be that powerful, that it was going to replace, you know, playing the piano, playing the guitar, baseball, tennis. Adam was really good at tennis, but he quit. He quit everything in order to have more time for the game. And that's the lost potential that I want everyone to just hear that if you knew what your child was going to lose as a result of the game, even if he didn't really get into any of the things that much we talked about today, the time he spends on that game is time that he's not spending on something else. And you have to know there will be lost potential in his life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It reduces his motivation for other new things. And it's because of this dopamine reward pathway. It's because of that baseline. Keep that baseline thing in mind. In fact, today when your kids come home, just draw a line across the page and explain this to them and say, we have to do things that are healthy and that can stay in this normal green zone. I call it the normal baseline of dopamine. We don't need to spike it all the time on these games. And they are not going to really understand that because they may already be a little bit addicted to it. And it's going to take a while. We're going to talk about here in just a second how you get them off. We're going to spend 1 minute telling you that. The 10th thing, number 10, is the loss of purpose in his life. And that kind of ties in with 9 as far as lost potential. But the loss of purpose and physically leaving his family, I felt like I didn't know that was going to be a risky thing. That Adam, in fact, verbalized to me that his gaming situation was his family and not his real family really wasn't that interesting anymore to him. And this was when we were in the thick of the worst part of it. We even, I don't know if y'all know this, everyone listening, there was a point one summer where we told Adam, you're going to have to move out if you don't quit gaming and get a job. And I thought, okay, that's my ticket. He's going to quit because he loves his family. And he was like, it didn't even bat an eye. He was just like, sure, I'll go move in with my friend who's a gamer. And he moved in with him for a few months and I couldn't even believe it. I could Wow. not believe it, but it was because his family, he had already moved mentally and emotionally. So if I had known that was even going to be an option, that I was allowing something that was going to cause him to detach from his family at that young age, never would have allowed it. I Yeah. never would have even tried to manage something like that was going to steal him away. And not only with us, his parents, but with his siblings. Think about that. Think about how sibling relationships suffer when you have a gamer in the house because they're not doing all the things together that they should be doing to have memories and to have all the wonderful family time and all the things together. And their sibling relationships are so important. And what an incredible gift to give your kids, you know?
Yes.
I mean, I know you're seeing that now with your kids as they get older.
Yes, I think the sibling relationships is a big one because, again, it takes their attention and they want it above all else. So they're not interested in hanging out with their siblings unless their siblings want to do gaming also.
Yeah, but even then they're not developing deep relationships and memories.
Yeah, we're just totally on the same page. You started to say what I was going to say. So
sorry.
No, I love it. That should tell the audience we are the same person in that way.
Didn't mean to jump in there.
I love that. I'm like, yeah, that's right, Melanie. That's why I love what you say so much. So no, you're exactly right. I mean, even then their sibling friendships are only based on the gaming, and that is not what you want as a parent.
No. And that's going to cause so much pain down the road, and they're going to be so detached down the road, and they're going to need each other down the road in life. When parents are gone, they need siblings. Siblings are so important. So those are my list of 10 things, and we're going to wrap up with some solutions. And like Anna says, and her book, Dopamine Nation, that the only way that you can fix any addiction is, she says, to take 30 days off completely cold turkey, really, on a lot of it. You can't do a little bit. You have to have 30 days of absolutely none of the drug, none of the activity, none of the thing that you're addicted to. She said the first 2 weeks are going to be so hard. And this is what we know. So if you're listening, you can get into our free forum on our website. It's the Connect group. You can get in there and say, hey guys, I'm doing a detox. I need help. And we'll jump in there and help you. We also have a Facebook group, the Screen Storm Families Facebook group. It's a private group where you can get in there. There's a ton of people in there that can also help you, but you have to do this if you want to fix the problem.
Yep.
There's no way around it. And then after 30 days, believe it or not, those first 2 weeks or so are really tough. But then after that, the dopamine baseline gets back to normal. That baseline gets reestablished. And guess what? They start having fun with normal, healthy things. Isn't that your dream?
Right? Yes. I will say that it's a slow burn, you know, in the sense of, I know that after 2 weeks it gets better, but we did see with Kyle, it took months for him to really reshape that brain.
Yeah. No, and I agree.
Like I said, even now, he would say that if he starts playing at something again, where maybe everybody's playing games, or he will notice immediately his brain does go back there. So depending on the child and depending how far they are into it, I think after 2 weeks, you're going to see a huge change, but don't expect this normal everyday person that you had before he started playing games. It might take some time. Yeah.
You will start to see some reappreciation of the more simple joys in life.
Yes.
Now depending on how long they've gamed, depending on how old they are, you know, it will be dependent on that, but it won't be after a day. It won't be after a week. It has to be 30 days of completely not having, like I would say, you've got to take it out of your house. Like, it's just like, if you have an alcoholic, you cannot have the alcohol in your house. You have to remove it. You have to have that detox period. You have to change your environment. There's all sorts of things. And we have the 30-day detox that we have in our site.
Makes it so much easier to do it with your detox.
Yes. And it's connected to our course that we have, the lifestyle course. And we are also getting so close to having our student course. And we're so excited about that. We're going to have a lot of this.
I can't wait.
Are going to have a lot of this information in there. So just hang in. If you're listening, help is on the way. We're going to explain this to your kids. Isn't that like the most fascinating thing?
Well, then you won't have to. That's what's great.
That's right. You can sit down with your kids and go through our student course with them. So Livia, let's you end us on some encouragement for the parent who's listening today, who's just maybe crying, because I would be crying if it were me and I had a gamer in my house, and I don't want anybody to cry. I want us to be empowered.
Well, I'm going to say this. I don't want anyone to cry either. And if I had a parent that was crying, I wish I could hug you right now and say, it's going to be okay. This is the hardest decision you've ever made. I will say it was the hardest parenting decision that Kurt and I ever made. But I would rather have you cry now than in 10 years when you've lost your child.
Yeah.
And you're saying, now it's too late. I don't have them. I have no relationship with them. Whatever their trajectory is through that deep gaming world, in 10 years, your crying will be regret. And that's much worse to me than crying right now. And the realization that, oh my word, when you can still make changes and you can still help that child, or just even create a healthy environment if you're starting at the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, I mean, I'm so sad. I know that. And when I hear a parent say they, two things, when I can talk to young families, I'm so excited because I know they can start from the beginning. And I feel for them because I know it's still going to be hard, because to go counterculture like that is hard. But I'm not sad for them, but I'm always sad for that parent that is already feeling like, oh no, it's too late, because I understand and you understand that, right? Yeah. We went through it.
Yes.
But at the same time, I know there's hope. There is great hope. And I have 32, 30, and 27-year-old who are healthy, happy young men who have done wonderful things in life and will continue to do so. And a lot of that is because of those decisions that we made at that time in their lives early on, even though we did have to backtrack because we already started in.
Right.
So there's hope in that.
And I would also just add to everything you just said that you have to take it one day at a time.
Yes.
I think that is the key with any addiction out there. And we're being very bold to call it exactly what it is. Any high dopamine producing activity, when you stop it, you have to take one day at a time. Don't worry about what's going to happen next week or next month, or if they're going to hate you in 2 months. Don't even worry about that. You take one day at a time, hug your kids, talk to your kids, have fun with your kids, get them to fall in love with those baseline dopamine activities that are so incredibly fun. Just being out in nature, all the things that bring joy back into our life. That's what we have to focus on. And we have to take 24 hours at a time.
And I love it.
So thank you, Olivia, so much for coming. The time flies. We're definitely having you back on more this year.
I love it.
So thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
Thank you, Melanie. I appreciate you so much.
And thank everyone for listening today. Our Screen Strong solution is so simple. It's our job as parents to guard our kids against any activities that will harm them. So remember to stay strong. In order to do that, you might want to look at our course. Like I said, we just talked about our student course. Please get into our Connect group on our website. We have a subscription as well on top of that, and you can also join that, and that gives you a ton more information. Remember, we've got your back, and we are here to help you remove the screen conflicts from your home. So until next time, stand up for your kids, stand out from the crowd, and stay strong.